Let's push into another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Bible by opening to Jeremiah chapter 51, where we left off last session, and we'll roll back just a little bit to verse number 41 to get our context back into our minds. This is part of a prophecy sent by God to Jeremiah to be then forwarded to the recent exiles from Judea into Babylon. One of the things that those folks are apparently concerned about, complaining about, is that Babylon is being too rough. Babylon is doing all sorts of horrible things, including they will eventually destroy the temple, as Jeremiah has been saying they will. And so God lets them know, yes, it is true that I am currently using Babylon to punish your sins, but I am keeping a close eye on Babylon's sins, and eventually they will be punished, and God will be using the Medes and the Persians to do that shortly after this time period. So Jeremiah 51, 41 says, "How Babylon is taken, the praise of the whole earth seized." And that's a little tongue-in-cheek there, that Babylon is currently the talk of the town. It's the praise of the whole earth. But eventually, they will also fall. They will be taken. They will be seized. "How Babylon has become a horror among the nations. The sea has come up on Babylon. She's covered it with its tumultuous waves." Now, Babylon does not itself sit upon the sea. So sea here is a metaphor for the invasion of the Medes and the Persians, and they'll flood over the land and flood over the city. "Her cities have become a horror, a land of drought and a desert, a land in which no one dwells and through which no man, no son of man passes." So they'll be depopulated as well, because of refugees running away and large swaths of the population being killed or dying from war-related diseases. This will all end in the desolation of Babylon, just like Judah is in the process of being desolated. Verse 44, God says, "I will punish Bel in Babylon and take out of his mouth what he has swallowed." Now, Bel is the Mesopotamian word for Lord. It's a reference to their great senior god there at Babylon, Marduk, I believe. And so he will be punished by God, and then God will take away from him what he's eaten, you know, metaphorically speaking again. And that would be the Jewish people, the Judeans that have gone into exile. God will bring them back, at least a representative group of them, back to the promised land. "The nation shall no longer flow to him. The wall of Babylon has fallen." And so Babylon is going to give up what they've taken in, and even the wall, which was very famous. It was very broad, very high, and so it's going to be down as well. Verse 45, "Go out of the midst of her, my people. Let everyone save his life from the fierce anger of he who is." So when the time comes, God is going to get some of his people out of Babylon and bring them back to the promised land. We already know about that. But also, this is a reminder that being in Babylon, the Judeans should not be participating in their sinful lifestyles. So they should be separate and out of her so that they don't get punished as part of the Babylonian judgment that's coming. Similar wording shows up in the book of Revelation when Mystery Babylon, codenamed Babylon, is about to come under the judgment of God in the great day of the Lord. And God puts out a call to his people to come out from among her so that you don't suffer under her judgment. So there is a tie between these words in Jeremiah and those words in Revelation. Verse 46, let not your heart faint, and be not fearful at the report heard in the land, when a report comes in 1 year, and afterward a report in another year, and violence is in the land, and ruler is against ruler. Very common when cultures, nations are deteriorating, they're falling apart, that there's a lot of chaos and a lot of rumors about chaos. And so God is basically saying, don't get caught up in the rumor mill and don't be scared as all of this chaos starts descending, because I'm in control. Therefore, verse 47, behold, the days are coming when I will punish the images of Babylon, so the idols and the idolatry. Her whole land shall be put to shame. All her slain shall fall in the midst of her. Then the heavens and the earth and all that is in them shall sing for joy over Babylon, for the destroyer shall come against them out of the north, declares he who is. Now again, I remind you that the out of the north phrase here is from Jeremiah's perspective. So he's down in Judah. And so the Medes and the Persians are also in the north. And so they will be coming against Babylon. Babylon must fall for the slain of Israel, just as for Babylon have fallen the slain of all the earth. And you who have escaped from the sword, go. Do not stand still. Remember he who is from far away, and let Jerusalem come into your mind. So here we are at the beginning of the exile, which we know from Jeremiah's other prophecies is going to be a time period of 70 years. That here at the beginning of that timeout period, the exiles are being reminded, be ready to go. Keep Jerusalem in your mind. Even though Jerusalem is going to be erased as a city whenever the Babylonians bring God's judgment upon the land, they are still, these Judeans are supposed to still keep Jerusalem in their hearts, in their mind, as a place to go back to. Verse 51, we are put to shame, for we have heard reproach, dishonor has covered our face, for foreigners have come into the holy places of he who is his house. That's a exclamation of the people, remembering the situation that Jerusalem, the holy city, and the holy temple are coming into reproach because of this judgment. And so they're mourning over that. Therefore, behold, the days are coming, declares he who is, when I will execute judgment upon her images, and through all her land the wounded shall groan. So Babylon coming under judgment. Though Babylon should mount up to heaven, though she should fortify her strong height, yet destroyers would come from me against her, declares he who is. That's a reference back to the high wall, the strong wall. So even if they were able to build even more massive walls that would go up into the sky, God's judgment is still going to take them down. Verse 54, a voice, a cry from Babylon, the noise of great destruction from the land of the Chaldeans, for he who is laying Babylon waste and stilling her mighty voice. Their waves roar like many waters. The noise of their voices is raised, for a destroyer has come upon her, upon Babylon. Her warriors are taken, their bows are broken in pieces, for he who is God of recompense, he will surely repay. So God's the one that's going to be doing all this. I will make her, make drunk her officials and her wise men, her governors, her commanders, her warriors. They shall sleep a perpetual sleep and not wake, declares the king whose name is he who is of the hosts. A little bit of play on something that Jeremiah's been doing already. He's going around with a symbolic cup to these various nations in the Middle East and telling them to drink this cup of God's wrath. Be drunk with the cup of God's wrath. And Babylon is the one that's going to force them to drink that judgment cup. And now that's turned around. And God will force the leadership, the military members of Babylon, to drink their own cup of God's judgment. And then they will end up dead. That's the perpetual sleep here. Their bodies will be dead. Thus says he who is of the hosts, the broad wall of Babylon shall be leveled to the ground, and her high wall shall be burned, her high gate shall be burned with fire. The peoples labor for nothing, and the nations weary themselves only for fire. So again, the big deal about the walls of Babylon were how tall they were, how wide they were, how strong they were, and the gates were all massive and very heavy timbered, and people worked on them at the directions of the leadership to make them this way. And God says, doesn't matter, I'm taking it down. Verse 59, the word that Jeremiah the prophet commanded Seraiah, the son of Neriah, the son of Maaseiah, when he went with Zedekiah, king of Judah, to Babylon in the fourth year of his reign. Seraiah was the quartermaster. So this is where we find out that there is going to be a royal entourage. Zedekiah is going to be the head of it, the king of Judah. This group is going to go up to Babylon and present themselves to King Nebuchadnezzar in the fourth year of Zedekiah, which that's what we're talking about, 594 here. And Jeremiah is supposed to pass on some other things with this entourage. So verse 60, Jeremiah wrote in a book all the disaster that should come upon Babylon, all these words that are written concerning Babylon. So the two chapters we've been working on. And Jeremiah said to Seraiah, when you come to Babylon, see that you read all these words and say, oh, he who is, you have said concerning this place that you will cut it off so that nothing shall dwell in it, neither man nor beast, and it shall be desolate forever. So the representative that Jeremiah gives this to, that would be Seraiah, he's the quartermaster that's also traveling in this entourage, he is to then read it aloud at Babylon City. Specifically, he's reading it to the Jewish exiles there. And once he gets done reading it, he's supposed to deposit it there in a special way. Verse 63, when you finish reading this book, and you should think about a scroll, when you finish reading this scroll, tie a stone to it and cast it into the midst of the Euphrates. The Euphrates ran right through Babylon City. And so he's supposed to toss it into the river with a weight of a stone on it and say, thus shall Babylon sink to rise no more because of the disaster that I'm bringing upon her, and they shall become exhausted. And thus far are the words of Jeremiah. And then we've got historical sections coming up for later in the next part of the book. So this is the message delivered from the prophet to the quartermaster, who will then read it and dump it into the Euphrates River, and it will all come to pass later when the Medes and the Persians overrun Babylon City and basically take over the Babylonian Empire as their own. At this point, we will leave Jeremiah for a bit and go to another prophet that arises during this time period. This prophet is living in Babylon itself, the country. He doesn't seem to be in the city of Babylon, but rather in a community of relocated Jews, relocated Judeans, a little southeast of Babylon City, at a place called Tel Aviv. Now, the modern city of Tel Aviv is apparently named after this community that was on one of the waterways of the Euphrates system. And so we go to the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel. And this is how the book begins. In the 30th year, now it is clear from reading forward into the book that the 30th year here is not related to the 30th year of King Nebuchadnezzar. It's not related to the 30th year of King Zedekiah. It's not related to the 30th year of the exile of either groups that have been exiled, Daniel or Jehoiakim. The only thing that really makes good sense is that it is the 30th year of Ezekiel himself. And so that's how I'm going to relate it in my teaching, that he had reached his 30th birthday when he was living in exile. And the 30th birthday was very significant because that was your full adulthood. And it was also when priests started functioning as individual workers. Previous to that, they kind of had to work under a senior priest. Now, Ezekiel is not capable of working in the temple because he's living in exile. He's been taken away at some point from his homeland. And I don't believe we're positive as to exactly which of the two exiles that took place in. He would have been about 25 years old whenever the Jehoiakim exile took place. So that's a possibility that he went with that one. But he would have been about 18 or 19, when Daniel and other young men in their teens were taken away into exile in 605. So either one of those is a possibility for when he left. But here we go. Ezekiel 1 again. In the 30th year, and then I'll throw in, of Ezekiel's life, in the fourth month, on the fifth day of the month. And when we transfer that over to the calendar, we're much more familiar with. We're talking about the middle of June in 594 BC. And that's interesting because that means that he was possibly going to come into contact with those that the quartermaster who was bringing the message from Jeremiah and sinking it in the Euphrates River. Don't know for sure, but it's possible he could have come into contact with him. But he was among the exiles by the Kebar Canal. A little bit of debate as to exactly where this Kebar Canal is. I agree with those commentators that say it was kind of the old riverbed for the Euphrates back in time that was being kept open as a secondary canal system going from the north of Babylon City and then down through the city of Nippur, which is southeast of Babylon City. And then from there, it would go down near Erech and go back into the main bed of the Euphrates. And so it's used as a transport irrigation system during this time period. And there was a Jewish community named Tel Aviv located on this canal between Babylon City and Nippur. And so he is there with the exiles at that site. And this is what he sees and reports. The heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. On the fifth day of the month, it was the fifth year of the exile of King Jehoiakim. So that's another one of the ways that we know for a fact it's 594 BC, and that the 30th year must be his age. The word of He Who Is came to Ezekiel, the priest. So now we know he is of the priestly family. The son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans by the Kebar Canal, and the hand of He Who Is was upon him there. So that's our introduction. Let's get into the details. Verse 4. As I looked, behold, a stormy wind came out of the north, and a great cloud with brightness around it, and fire flashing forth continually, and in the midst of the fire, as it were, gleaming metal. Now, I'm going to just jump ahead in my own belief of what is happening here. I think that Ezekiel is trying to describe here his sighting of the Shekinah glory of God, that it is a great big cloudy tower, and it is constantly got this electrical light show going on inside of it. And he can see inside the cloud something that looks like shining metal. And it's coming closer and closer to him. Now, he's the only one apparently seeing this. There are other people present, but he alone is having this vision of God's Shekinah glory arriving at his sight. Verse 5, and from the midst of it came the likeness of four living creatures. Now, in this report, he only just refers to them as living creatures. In later reports, he will specify that they are cherubim, a special class of angelic being. And this is their appearance. They had a human likeness, so they were basically humanoid in their appearance. So they had a torso and appendages attached to this torso, those appendages being like legs and arms. Their legs were straight, which I take to mean they had no kneecaps, no bend. The soles of their feet were like the soles of a calf's foot, meaning don't think of a human foot, think instead of the foot of a cow, a hoof. And they sparkled like burnished bronze. And that's a reference to the feet. The hooves look like really highly polished bronze. Verse 8. Under their wings, on their four sides, they had human hands. Now, we know that there are four wings. That comes up later. But as far as I can tell, it is unclear as to whether they had four hands or just two hands that were covered underneath the four wings. And I'm not altogether certain how we can come to a conclusion on that. Now, the four, meaning the four beings, and four is a really big number in here, four faces, four wings, possibly four arms and hands. The four beings had their faces and their wings thus. Their wings touched one another. Each one of them went straight forward without turning as they went. So they're moving toward Ezekiel. And they're not turning their bodies. Their bodies always stay static in relationship to one another. And they seem to be either in a circle, we would say, or a diamond pattern, depending on how you do the lines. And their wings are stretched out between each of the cherubim. Much like the arrangement in the temple, where you've got two cherubim that were in the Holy of Holies with their wings stretched out to each wall and then toward the center where their wings touched each other. So these cherubim are in relationship to each other, and the wings form a perimeter around this Shekinah glory cloud. Verse 10, as for the likeness of their faces, each had a human face. So we know one of the faces is humanoid, probably with a beard, but not necessarily. The four had the face of a lion on the right side. Now, is that the right side of the being, or is it the right side from Ezekiel's perspective? I think we can come to that conclusion from other passages elsewhere, but let's just go with the basic information right now. And the four had the face of an ox on the left side, and then the four had the face of an eagle, which means the eagle is on the opposite side from the human face. Such were their faces, and their wings were spread out above. Each creature had two wings, each of which touched the wings of another, while two covered their bodies. So two wings were folded down against the bodies, covering the hands. And so that's a possible bit of indication that they only had two hands and two arms, because two wings are covering those. And then each went straight forward, and wherever the Spirit would go, they went without turning as they went. So this is, I believe, God's Shekinah glory. The base of this Shekinah glory is surrounded by the presence of these four guardian angelic beings referred to as cherubim. And I believe these cherubim are related to the cherubim that were in the Garden of Eden, guarding that place from a reinvasion of sinful mankind.